Welcome to the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast. Whether your family has been on this journey for years or you're just getting started, we're here to support and encourage you along the way. And now your hosts, Lynette Ezell and Tara Melber.
Welcome back to the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast. Today, we're privileged to have Carol Lozier to discuss how to select a therapist for your child. Carol is a well-respected, licensed clinical social worker in Louisville, Kentucky, who specializes in counseling those who've experienced trauma. She's the author of several books, actually, all of which I own, The Adoptive and Foster Parent Guide, How to Heal Your Child's Trauma and Loss, a devotional book called Devotions of Comfort and Hope for Adoptive Moms, and she also has a Bible study out for kids called Clothed in Armor. And in February, she's going to have a new book out called DBT, Therapeutic Activity Ideas for Working Teens. That's awesome, Carol.
Thanks. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for being here today. You know, when it came time for us to find a therapist, we didn't know where to begin. Mm-hmm. And so before we jump into that, how to select a therapist, maybe our first question to you today is, when and why should I consider counseling for my adopted or foster child?
Okay, that's a great question. So, and actually I have a couple different answers. So one, my first answer would be that you want to be prepared for mm-hmm. anything that might come your way. And for any child that has a history, any kind of history of trauma or loss, we want to be prepared for those developmental milestones that come, because with each developmental stage, kiddos might run into a snag.
Mm-hmm, right.
And so you want them to have a relationship with a therapist that you guys feel comfortable with as the parents, and that the child feels comfortable with and is a good match. You don't want to wait till you're in crisis and then start thinking, okay, who are we going to get to help our child? So you really want to research, be ready, go ahead and schedule an appointment. I've even had families that have come in and just said, hey, we just want to have someone in case something comes up, and I'm all in favor for that. And, you know, I meet the kids and then I say to the parents, yeah, I think they're doing great. Keep doing what you're doing. Or I might say, I think we have this one little issue we need to work on.
Right.
And maybe do a session or two. And then they don't come back to me for, you know, sometimes several years, maybe till they hit adolescence or until something comes up. So that's one way to think about finding a therapist. Another is, you know, you really want to look for, is my child having difficulty, and are those symptoms or those behaviors that are coming up, you know, on the one hand, it could be something that fits that developmental stage for the child. Like, for example, you know, there's lots of kids who have difficulty that have temper tantrums. Well, for young kids, you know, they have temper tantrums.
Yeah, it's normal. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Especially 3 and 4 year old kiddos.
Right.
I mean, they have lots of temper tantrums. 2, 3, 4, that's prime time. But what you're looking for is, does the behavior fit with the developmental stage that my child's in? And is the intensity and the duration of the problem out of whack? Is it more intense or in longer duration for what is average for this age child?
That is fantastic. Mm-hmm. That's a great way to just step back and mm-hmm. ask your family this question. Like, all right, let me stand back and see what's going on here at this developmental stage.
Right. So, and if you're not sure about developmental stages and what average behaviors are, I love this series of books. And when my kids were little, I used them all the time for my kids. And this is the work I do every day, because we can't remember every single developmental stage, and we can't remember. I mean, I'm sure there's some people who can, but I can't. every single behavior that falls in. So there's a series of books based on children's ages, and it begins with your 1 year old, your 2 year old, your 3 year old. So they're particular for that age, and they're written by Louise Bates Ames. And it goes up to, I think the last book is for ages 10 through 13. The last book is sort of those ages all together.
That's a great resource and very helpful, because many times we have moms or dads come to us and say, do you think this is an adoption issue or
right.
is this a 3 year old issue?
Exactly.
And because we've parented lot of 3 year olds, we're like, total 3 year old issue.
Yeah. But in the teen years, it can get clouded when
they're
trying to make life decisions.
Yes.
I like what you said, Carol, about the development, because, You know, at certain developmental ages, our children accept their story for what it is. But then at certain developmental ages, they're thinking about it differently and their worldview is a little bit different. And so it may be that things that didn't bother them in the past are all of a sudden
they
a
can
huge
resent
trigger.
It. Right, right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's especially true around the teen years.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we want to start telling children their story mm-hmm. at a very young age. So they grow up, and life books are a wonderful way to do that. So they grow up with their story, and it's not, you know, one of the things I always worry about when parents wait and wait and wait to tell kids is we don't want to create any area where they can feel betrayed that you
right.
A parent kept information from them. So I like kids to know it as early as possible so they grow up with it, especially before those teen years. Because again, developmentally, the teen years are about identity
mm-hmm.
and independence. So, you know, they're really looking at where do I come from? You know, who do I look like? Where do I get these, you know, certain hobbies or strengths or weaknesses? Where does it come from? You know, some of it is going to come from the adoptive family or the foster mm-hmm. family even. But part of it also is going to come from birth family.
That's
and
right.
So kids are really looking at all of these qualities that they have and getting to know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely going to come up to some degree in the teen years.
That is so true, and we've seen that in our own family. And so there's so many factors, though, to consider when you go to select a therapist. And we didn't really know where to begin, but if you could just help us today, Carol, like how, what questions do we ask? How do we get started? How do we know, what track do we get on to pick the right therapist for our family?
Well, you know, in particular with adoptive and foster families, you really want to choose a therapist who understands all the intricate details about a family who's one that's made up of adopted and or foster kids.
Mm-hmm.
So it needs to be a therapist who really understands those dynamics. So you would hope in their practice that it's at least 40 to 50%.
That's great.
Adoptive or foster families. So that's probably the first thing that you're looking for is what's their experience. And, you know, you would hope that they have a varied experience, but sometimes they may not, because a varied experience comes from a lot of years.
Right.
So, and you know, some young therapists are great too. There's nothing wrong with, I was a young therapist. My daughter's a young therapist. There's nothing wrong with that. But you want them to have been in the adoption community for a while. So at least 2 or 3 years.
That's a great point. So aside from the 40 to 50% of their clientele being adoptive or foster parents and having some experience, mm-hmm. What's something else that you really feel like is really important to look for in a therapist?
Well, I think the other important things to look for are what type of therapy do they use?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's lots of great paradigms out there that we can use with adoptive kids. But we want it to be one in which you're working on their past trauma and really helping to heal that while also working on current behavior and making behavioral changes. So it's got to be this great marriage between healing the past and working on the current.
That's good. It's a both and. So that they can continue
Absolutely.
To move forward in their life. It's not just continually thinking about or dealing with the past, but it's dealing with the past. And then how does that help you grow as an individual?
And move forward.
And move forward.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So each therapist is going to have, you know, different ways that they've been trained. And so, you know, as long as they have past and current ways of working with the child, then I think that's to me is the most healing.
Do you find that many therapists don't recognize adoption and foster care as an area of specialization?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it drives me absolutely insane. You know, there are so many times that I'll see kiddos who've been in therapy for 2 or 3 years
mm-hmm.
with a therapist who works with kids, but has little knowledge in adoption.
Right.
And they're well-meaning. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think they're, you know, have any malintent. They don't realize that adoption and foster care is a specialty, just like eating disorders, substance abuse, mm-hmm. chronic mental health, like all these areas that are specializations. Well, adoption and foster care is too.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I'll even go to consultation groups or trainings and, you know, hear other therapists talk about how they have maybe one family that's an adoptive family. And I just cringe. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, that
right.
poor family.
Yeah.
You know, because while the therapist is well-meaning, they don't have the correct training to be treating that child.
Right. Well, as far as when you bring in a new child into therapy, what do you think about whether or not are parents in the room with you during therapy, or do you treat the child without the parents in the room? How does that work? I feel like it'd make me uncomfortable to send my child, you know, when I'm trying to attach and maintain that attachment, to send my child in the room. But I don't know, is that wrong thinking?
Not at all. You know, traditionally, and gosh, when I went to school ages ago, like I think I graduated in, let's see if I can even remember, 89.
Mm-hmm.
The way I was trained and the way everybody worked with kids then, and I already was in the adoption arena at that point, but the way pretty much everybody was working with kids and still do is to separate.
Mm-hmm.
Even very little children, they'll bring back into therapy by themselves, and the parents wait in the waiting room. So as far as working with an adopted or foster child, we always, for the most part, until we hit those teen years,
mm-hmm.
and even then, sometimes I keep the families in the room quite a bit, but especially for younger than teen, we always want to keep the parent in the room with the child for quite a few reasons. One is to work on that attachment. And one of the ways is that we work on attachment is by, you know, as we're working on the past, the parent will develop even more compassion and connection with the child because they're hearing what the child went through.
Right.
They're hearing the, you know, not being fed when they needed to be fed, not being held when they needed, feeling neglected, feeling unloved, you know, all the things that occur for kids when they're in situations like that. So it helps build the compassion and attachment. If the child does feel sad or begins to cry, the parent can be there
to comfort,
to comfort the child. That's not my role.
Oh,
right.
I love that, Carol.
That's really, really important.
It is. And then, you know, the other piece is that sometimes parents are at a loss for, you know, how to set limits or how to, you know, they're sort of a little lost with, okay, how do I do this therapeutic parenting thing? Because it's very different than traditional parenting. And so in the session, they see me doing that with their child and they can, you know, kind of follow what I'm doing. And so it helps the parent see, oh, okay. So I can tell my child, hey, buddy, eyes on me, listening ears, kind hands. Like they're hearing all the ways that I'm talking with their child, and they can continue to do that at home.
So you're not only doing therapy with the child, but you're also helping train the parent
exactly.
to be a therapeutic parent at home on a daily basis.
Exactly.
Right.
Yep.
So the both and there is really important because you once a week or however often you see the child is not going to maintain those things if the parent is not being therapeutic at home.
Exactly. There's a big difference between traditional parenting and therapeutic parenting. And, you know, traditional parenting most of the time does not work well with kiddos who have trauma and loss.
How would you describe therapeutic parenting?
Well, so the contrast is traditional parenting is just kind of go with the flow, do what you grew up with, do what you think you need to do in the moment. It's pretty relaxed kind of parenting,
mm-hmm.
whereas therapeutic parenting is really very purposeful. You're really thinking about, okay, how do I encourage this behavior? How do I reduce this one? What do I say here to help in my connection? almost, and so there's not a lot of relaxation there.
No,
you
got to
be
not.
On your toes quite a bit. Pardon?
There's not. You have to bring your A game to the therapeutic parenting.
Yes, absolutely. You have to be. You have to be very purposeful with pretty much everything you do.
So, Carol, one of the questions I have is that because you're looking for a therapist who has adoption experience and foster care experience, what if you live in an area that doesn't seem to have anybody? I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of people in rural, more rural areas that don't have a therapist close by. So what do you do?
That's a great question. And hopefully there are therapists who'd be willing to learn that are close by. You know, the one thing that I would look for, even in a rural community, is therapists that work a lot with Child Protective Services. Because Child Protective Services, you know, they are the body that oversees and removes kiddos, and they have to refer to counseling often for foster kids. And so you want to first look at where do the foster children in town go for counseling? There's got to be at least one or two therapists in town who are serving those families.
That's a really good
point.
So
that's what I would look for first. That's what I would look for first. And then, you know, the other thing is, do you have a therapist who'd be willing to learn?
Right.
Like, they could read my book. They could read Karen Purvis's book. Like, there are so many books that are out there that a knowledgeable therapist could read and say, okay, I see what I need to do. And then, like, for example, when I was learning way back when about specializing more in adoptions, I contacted Deborah Gray and I said, hey, would you be interested in supervising me? And she was wonderful. She said, yeah, I'd love to. So we, you know, I was in Louisville and she was in Seattle, and we would talk every other week, and I would discuss cases with her, and she would direct me with, okay, try this, maybe do this idea. You know, I would consult with her, and she would give me great help and feedback.
That's really great. So you can even find, as a therapist, you can find people to be able to help you and train you up in this way. So you just really have to have a willing learner that would work with you and try new things. That's a really great point. But I am going to plug your book, The Adoptive and Foster Parent Handbook, because I've referred that to a lot of people because it's really, really practical. And so people who can't seem to find a therapist close by, you know, while you're looking for a therapist, start here. Because the practicality of that has been really beneficial to many families that have used it. So I do, I really appreciate that.
Thanks.
Carol, here's what I would like to, I need some direction on, because I talk with families who are with a therapist and they're not sure it's going to work for their family, but how long does it take, or how long do we give it to make sure that this therapist is a positive and comfortable fit for our family? Like, how long do we give that?
Well, I think, you know, within a session or two, the family would know whether or not they feel comfortable with that person. You do want to give that person a little bit of time to build that rapport with your child and your family. And also, it's going to take a little while for the therapist to get to know your family and begin to work on the past trauma, but also to give you some great ideas in terms of current behavior. So I would say by session four, you should feel like you're headed in the right direction.
I think one thing that we as parents have to recognize and consider is that when you do find a good fit for therapy, when you start working on it, that it's an endurance factor, that we have to persevere through it. And the Lord calls us to persevere and to endure, to be able to help bring restoration to our children. And so do you find often or ever that people just tend to give up because, it, you know, you start and you're not seeing the results that you want to see
quickly
yesterday?
Right, yeah.
I don't think I see that often, because I think I also am reminding families this takes time. You know, on average, it's depending on the issue, depending on the child and the family. But, you know, when you begin working on an issue, you know, it could easily be 6 months to a year to work on some of those first levels of things that are coming up. And you know, really it is, you know, Tara, like you said, it's a marathon.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe at age 6, you come in with your child for the first time and we work on as much as we can for a 6-year-old. That doesn't mean that we've kind of gotten to everything and there's full healing. It just means we've kind of put into place as much healing as we can. And then maybe you don't come back for a couple more years. And then those issues will come up again at the next developmental stage. Mm-hmm. And we work on it again as much as we can for an 8-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe, you know, when they're 13 or 14, you come back. So, you know, it's not like it's a, you start in therapy when they're 3 and you don't finish until they're, you know, 18. It's mm-hmm. a, you work on it, take a break, come back, work on it, take a break, come back. I mean, you know, and that's what I really like for kids as much as I can. I do want them to work hard when they're here, but I also want it to be as fun and inviting as I can make it, because, you know, for children who have trauma and loss, this is a lifelong thing.
Right.
It doesn't mean they'll be in therapy every week for their whole life. What it means is they will need to go back into therapy and work on things at every, you know, developmental stage. Things mm-hmm. like maybe when they get married.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Maybe mm-hmm. when they first have children.
That's when I've seen maybe, the triggers, you know, hit. Yeah.
Maybe a big one is when they first go away to college. Mm-hmm. I see that a lot.
Right.
That really brings up abandonment for kids.
It
even
does.
Though it's a natural time to move away, it's mm-hmm. it's a really, really tough one for kids.
And so your initial point at the beginning of us chatting was making sure that you're building a relationship with a therapist so that they can
right.
say, you know what, I'm just not dealing well with this. And then even when they're in college, to be able to say, hey, mom, I think I'm going to call Mrs. Lozier because I'm really struggling with this. And it's not a big deal, like, because they already know
exactly.
you. So I think that's
right.
so wise. And, you know, I think we have to really, as believers, remove the stigma that just because you go to counseling doesn't mean that you're, you know, something terrible is wrong with you. It's the Lord gives us people in our lives to help us move past
right.
things. And, you know, an example of that is in Exodus 17 when, you know, Joshua is fighting the Amalekites and Moses goes up with Aaron and Hur up to the mountain. And it says, but Moses' hands grew weary. So they took a stone and put it under him and he sat on it while Aaron and Hur held up his hands, one on one side and the other on the other. And his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. And Joshua overwhelmed Amalek and his people with the sword. So we have people in our lives that are going to need to help uphold our hands. And sometimes that person is a pastor. And sometimes that person is our counselor. And sometimes that person is our friend. But there should be no stigma whatsoever with this. And we've just got to move on past that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And any of the people in our lives that are there to help us, you know, are a gift from God.
Right.
I mean, he's given all of us different gifts to help one another.
That's exactly true. Well, Carol, really quickly before we leave, I would like you to tell me, you've also written a Bible study for children called Clothed in Armor. And the reason that I bring this mm-hmm. up is because we often say, you know, we can do lots of things, but we can't take the Lord out of it. And so tell me a little bit about the Bible study that you have for kids and why you feel like it was so important to publish that.
Well, I started noticing with the kiddos that I work with, I mean, I always noticed spiritual warfare, but I really started noticing how out of their trauma, they were, of course, having lots of negative thoughts about themselves. And I just really noticed how much Satan just loves to get in and stir up those negative beliefs. And just, you know, as Satan whispers those negative things in kiddos' ears, they begin to believe them.
Mm-hmm.
And it really, you know, I really felt like God placed on my heart the importance of writing this Bible study for children, just to make a fun way for kids to look at themselves and learn. And so I just felt the importance of helping kids see that these negative thoughts are not from God, they're from Satan, and the importance of really seeing that they don't have to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to believe these things, and just really being able to put on, you know, the armor of God to be able to fight that battle against Satan and his lies that he loves to tell all of us. But, you know, for kids, I think it's even more important for them to recognize those are lies. Those aren't the truths about who they are.
And what a perfect example, Carol, mm-hmm. of the need to start establishing with a therapist or asking the questions or make a step toward therapy for our children before even they come home.
Mm-hmm.
And before these triggers mm-hmm. hit, these different levels of maturity and, you know, middle school years are difficult. The teen years are difficult. Mm-hmm. Launching from the home and leaving the nest is a difficult time for them. And so what a perfect example and some great wisdom you've shared with us today on getting all of that settled before the triggers hit. Mm-hmm. So we're so grateful for your time.
Sure. Oh, I'm so glad you all invited me. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Carol.
You've been listening to the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast, a ministry of the North American Mission Board and funded through the Cooperative Program. This month and through the end of the year, we would like to ask you to consider giving to the Minister's Adoption Fund. This fund provides grants to Southern Baptist ministers and missionaries who are adopting. By giving financially, you are able to be a part of seeing many children become beloved sons and daughters. For more information, visit sinrelief.org.